We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's 4:08, Jordana Green, David at the helm. You know I'm alone on Fridays because Paul does his Sunday show, but we are now checking in with my fearless partner. He is, I'm told, somewhere near Pittsburgh. Yes, Paul, where are you?
I'm just west of Pittsburgh on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. I'm scared. I'm trying to get as far away from these storms as I can, Jor.
Right? Okay, so we do have a tornado watch. I'm failing epically at giving a proper report. Even David saying, Jor, mention those storms, do this, do that. But I'm not a meteorologist. I just pretend to be one on the radio.
Well, you do a pretty good job. You could work in most major markets, I fear. Hey, we're watching a confirmed tornado near Evansville. That's just west of Alexandria. So that's obviously a step up. It's not a Doppler-indicated rotating storm. We actually have storm spotters confirming a tornado on the ground west of Alexandria. So a tornado warning till 4:30 for Douglas County. That is the most serious situation right now. These storms are pretty intense right now, especially near Alexandria. So folks in Evansville and Brandon and Carlos and Miltona and Parker's Prairie will want to be prepared here to head to the basement or a small windowless room on the ground floor. And as Laura mentioned at the top, this tornado watch does include some of the western counties of the metro, Sherburne, Wright, Carver, LeSueur County, under this tornado watch, which is in effect until 8 o'clock this evening. Farther to the north, the concern is flooding, crazy rains from Brainerd Lakes area, Fergus Falls area, on up to Bemidji, 2-4 inches of rain in a short period of time. So we have a watch, a flood watch, till midnight, and even a few tornado warnings in effect. I'm sorry, flash flood warnings in effect, okay. Brainerd Lakes area specifically. So these storms, I think, will weaken somewhat before hitting the metro later this evening and overnight tonight. There's still a possibility of hail and some damaging winds. Can't rule out an isolated tornado, but usually the tornado threat diminishes after sunset as the atmosphere becomes a little more stable. I'm more concerned about heavy rain, hail, and maybe some straight-line winds. And then all this stuff gets swept out of town in my direction, and we should salvage a nice weekend, big drop in humidity, a couple of comfortable, beautiful days from tomorrow afternoon right through Wednesday of next week.
Well, I'm glad to hear that they're leaving, because this happens to be a baseball tournament for a lot of kids in town. I'm already getting texts, what does Paul say about this afternoon? I think they're only down in Chanhassen, but we're pretty safe here in the metro from anything severe, at least until 6, right, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I'd say at least 2 or 3 hours. I don't see any concerns until after about maybe 8 or 9 o'clock in the immediate Twin Cities metro. The real concern now, Alexandria Lakes area for that tornado threat, Brainerd Lakes area for the flood threat. By the way, Motorworks BMW loaned me an X3, Jor, to make this road trip to visit my dad for his 90th birthday. And We're going to have Folker on the air Monday reminiscing about 90 years, what he would do differently, what he did right. And I have to say, people were driving at 80 to 90 miles an hour, just keeping up with traffic in Ohio and Indiana. And it was like the Autobahn in Germany. It was amazing. And 100 miles an hour in an X3 feels like 60 miles an hour in a regular car. Not saying I drove
car reviews. Not, of course not. Well, and also, Lori better be driving right now while you're giving us the forecast and talking on the phone.
I'm stopped at a rest stop right outside of 7-Eleven. I got a little caffeine to keep us going.
Excellent.
And I'm checking my phone, my app, Jura. I've got Doppler in my pocket and Thunder in my pants.
We're safe. We're hands-free.
Lori, thank you. Lori, keep him safe. Apparently, he's got a Doppler in his pocket. And what did he say? A tornado in his pants.
Yeah, thunder in his pants.
Well,
I don't know if you can say that on the radio.
That didn't come out right. Doppler in my pocket, yeah.
So good. Oh, this is why we call you. That was the best weather forecast I've ever heard. Lori, keep him in line. Good luck, my friends. And please be safe.
I will.
Thank you, guys. Be safe. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. And we can't wait to talk to Folker, too, on Monday. But, David, just so I'm clear, it was I've got a Doppler in my pocket and thunder in my pants.
Now, the Doppler in the pocket refers to his smartphone that he uses for the – but the thunder in the pants, I do not know for the life of me what that means.
Gas? Maybe the tacos that they stopped for? Where is he going with that? He kills me. I use Paul's app too, though, by the way. It's called Aris Pulse. And that's when I do the forecast for you guys. That's what I use. I think it's fantastic. He's really spot on. So, oh my gosh. That was so worth that phone call. Oh, that was classic. I love them both. When we get back, 75 years ago today, victory over Japan. We are going to talk with author Ken Davis, the author of the Don't Know Much series, about VJ Day. That's next on News Talk 830 WCCO. August 14th, not only the day that my baby girl turns 13, happy birthday, Ruby. She's with her friends now having a great day. 75 years ago, it was VJ Day, victory over Japan. In the words of Harry Truman, it was the momentous day, quote, when fascism died. Here to talk with us about VJ Day is Ken Davis. He is the author of the Don't Know Much series, and he has a new book out coming this, I think it's September, but we're going to ask him, Strongman, The Rise of Five Dictators and the Fall of Democracy. So we are looking forward to that book. But Ken, I'm so happy to have you on the show with us today.
It's always a great pleasure to be with you, Jordana, and congratulations on getting to teenage years, I understand.
Yes.
it will get even more interesting now, of course.
Of course.
How are you? And, you know, obviously it's a great day for you as the mom, mm-hmm. but it's an extraordinary day in our history, and I'm really kind of surprised that so little attention is being paid to not only the 75th anniversary of what was VJ Day, Victory Over mm-hmm. Japan, it meant the end of World War II. This day, I'm in New York City, I can tell you, there was no social distancing. There were 2 million people in Times Square on
I know, you
August
sent me a picture.
14th.
Yeah, I can
yeah,
see this
it's
picture.
An extraordinary picture.
Wow,
And you know, you mentioned Harry Truman making that announcement. Mm-hmm. He said this is the day they accepted the full acceptance of the Japanese surrender unconditionally, which had been the terms that they had mentioned a few weeks earlier at a very important conference called the Potsdam Conference. And Truman had demanded that unconditional surrender. And then, of course, 2 atomic bomb droppings. This was an extraordinary period, not only in American history, but world history. It's a period that really shaped our world, the beginning of the atomic age, the end of this dreadful fighting that had begun for the United States in December 7th, 1941, with Pearl Harbor. And it's really a kind of, I'm not too surprised anymore, but a little bit surprised that we're not paying attention to it. I know we have a lot on our plate, but this was really a world-changing moment for America and the rest of the world. It was not only the end of one world, a war, but the beginning of the Cold War.
Right. And that's what's so interesting, because it's sort of ushered in the era of a new kind of war. And people should remember that World War II was the most deadly war in history. 50 million lives were lost during World War II. And then, of course, we ushered in this era of the Cold War. And we will talk about that. But I do want to go back, because I think that quote from Harry Truman that you and I both referenced is really important right now. He called this day the day when fascism died. Do you agree with that?
Well, it certainly was very, very briefly for a shining moment, because he was obviously talking about the death of the German and Italian governments about a few months earlier in May. Mm-hmm. That had been Victory Over Europe Day. Of course, Nazi Germany defeated, and alongside it, Mussolini's Italy. And then Japan, which was, we don't think of Japan quite as the fascist state, but it was a highly authoritarian state with a divine ruling emperor and a massive and very, very cruel totalitarian rule over most of Asia, including China and Korea. And the bitterness between those countries, of course, we don't think about that too much as Americans, but that's part of this history as well, the 75 years of animosity that has existed between these giants of Asian power. So that's why I say this is such an important piece of world history that we are still contending with today. So did fascism die? Yes, indeed, it did briefly. And of course, 50 years later, the Soviet Union, Stalin's great empire that he had built brutally with, many more people died under Stalin, for instance, than died under Hitler. We think of Hitler as the mass murderer, but Stalin's numbers were worse. And of course, the end of communism, it took another 50 years. And we did think that that was going to be the end of usher in a new era of democracy in the 1990s. And unfortunately, it hasn't come to pass. We see the rise of authoritarians around the world, and it's a very troubling sign to me as a historian and as an American.
Well, let's talk about the greatest lessons. I mean, obviously, the Holocaust and World War II and all 50 million lives were lost, a total tragedy. What were some of the greatest takeaways from World War II, and have we learned those lessons?
Well, I think one of the most important things we're still debating, and I write about it a good deal at my website right now, don'tknowmuch.com. You can see a real timeline of this these events where I say the month that changed the world. The big issue at the time, and still is, did we need to drop those atomic bombs? And certainly that was the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima on August 6th, and then Nagasaki on August 9th. Very, very controversial to these days. Were they necessary? Why was it done? These are questions historians still argue over, but I don't think we can argue over the fact that these two bombs were so devastating and so destructive that one of the real lessons we must take away is how careful we must be about the use of these bombs. And of course, we've had leaders talk a little bit too freely, especially in recent times, about the use of atomic weapons. And I think one of the most horrific lessons of World War II and this period is the dreadful costs of using atomic weapons. Hundreds of thousands lost over many years because of radiation has a long-term effect of cancers, in addition to the nearly 100,000 who were killed in each city instantly by these bombs. So it was an extraordinary, brutal moment in history. And I'm not making the argument here, we can talk about it, that it wasn't necessary. But because there are a lot of men, and men of my father's generation, my uncles, who were in the Pacific, and they were very happy that they didn't have to go and fight in Japan. And that's why, ostensibly, those bombs were dropped.
Mm-hmm. Ken, I know you have a new book coming out, Strong Man, The Rise of Five Dictators and the Fall of Democracy. When is it out? Is it September?
It's coming in October, and it's, it speaks very much to what we're talking about here. I write about the rise of the five of the most brutal dictators of the 20th century, starting with Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, and how they all came to power. What is the strong man's kind of playbook? What do they use to gain such power at such enormous cost? And it's an important story to understand because we're seeing it around the world, and we're seeing it to a degree in the United States. Democracy is under assault in our country. We do not vote in sufficient numbers. Right now, we're having these questions about how we're going to vote in the midst mm-hmm. of the pandemic, and they're very serious questions for the future of democracy. So I don't say this glibly at all. I really feel that we're at a very much of a crucial point in our history, and understanding the past and understanding how these very brutal dictators came to power is a very important lesson of history. And we must learn these lessons of history if we're going to make the world a better place.
Ken Davis, the website, is it don'tknowmuch.com?
That's correct. And right now you can find The Ones That Changed the World and a little bit more about my book, Strong Man, coming out, as well as Don't Know Much About History, where I discuss these issues, which is, I'm shocked to say, Jordana, it's you have a baby who's a teenager. My baby, Don't Know Much About History, is 30 years old. It's hard for me to believe. This is the anniversary year. The book came out in 1990, and it's still going strong. Been revised and updated many times in those 30 years. But you can go back and look at that, and I talk about all of these events in World War II as well.
Well, quality lasts, Ken. We appreciate your expertise, and we appreciate your knowledge. Thank you for sharing today.
It's always a great pleasure to talk to you, and just remember that it was there was no social distancing in Times Square 75 years ago. 2 million people, and they hugged and kissed each other a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ken Davis, we so appreciate you. Don't Know Much series. Yeah, that picture that Ken sent me is a life picture, like Life magazine. It's on Getty Images. You can literally 2 million people in Times Square. It is extraordinary. Ken referenced democracy. He referenced how important voting is, fair voting systems, equality in voting, and fairness. We are going to talk with Secretary of State Steve Simon next on our votes and having them count in November.
They want $3.5 billion for the mail-in votes, okay, universal mail-in ballots. They want $25 billion for the post office. Now, they need that money in order to have the post office work so it can take all of these millions and millions of ballots. But if they don't get those two items, that means you can't have universal mail-in voting.
That's right. You can't. That was President Trump Thursday morning on Fox News saying he was opposed to the USPS funding because it would help universal mail-in voting this fall. He has reportedly alleged that mail-in ballots lead to fraud, although experts have insisted that that is not true. And in fact, friends, the president has requested a mail-in ballot for himself, and certainly in the upcoming congressional primary in Florida. Jordana Green here. Thank you for spending some time with me. Boy, I have a lot of questions about this. We'll talk more about USPS later in the show with Sloan Martin, but here to talk about voting and your mail-in vote and if it's going to be counted is Secretary of State Steve Simon joining us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline. Steve, so happy to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I know you're always upbeat and you always lay it plain for us, but this is very concerning to me. I voted mail-in in the primary. I hope to vote mail-in in the presidential election. Will my vote get there in time and will it be counted?
Yes, it will. If you and everyone else has a plan to vote and really think this through, it will. Look, whoever it is who is trying maybe to slow down the Postal Service will not slow down democracy, period. We will not let it happen. So that means to your listeners who want to grow, join the growing number of Minnesotans who are choosing to vote that way in the general election, so far almost 700,000 and climbing, if they want to do that, then it just means please order that ballot earlier, like now. Don't wait till October. You can go to mnvotes.org. That's mnvotes.org. Takes you maximum 5 minutes. Second, once you get that ballot, which you will starting September 18th, that's only 5 weeks from today, believe it or not, 35 days from now. Once you get it and you're satisfied with your votes, send it in. Don't wait until the last minute. And third, realize that whenever you get it in, you don't have to send it back by mail. You may have gotten it by mail to wherever you live, but you can drop it off at the address listed on the envelope, or better yet, have someone you know and trust drop it off for you. So those are all individual steps that will make sure that you, Jordana, and your listeners will have that mail ballot counted.
So I appreciate that answer, and thank you for being so plain with that and keeping it in terms we can understand. So you're saying we vote, and then we drop it at the address on the envelope. Can we also bring it in on election day to our balloting place?
You can bring it in on election day, but don't bring it to your polling place. Bring it to the place on the envelope.
Ah, okay. All right. That is very helpful. I appreciate that. Now, I have a soundbite from you on the show months ago talking about the barcodes and explaining how there is no fraud during mail-in voting. But I want to ask you again, if people have not heard this soundbite that I've definitely overplayed, is voting by mail safe? And is there fraud via voting by mail?
Yes. And pretty much no. I mean, the numbers in Minnesota and nationwide of anyone who's able to somehow get through the security procedures is nothing or close to nothing.
I heard it's less than winning the Powerball, the amounts of mail voter fraud there is, and those are pretty slim pickings.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. We have the security features in place. It's always tied to the intended voter. So if the person hanging out at mailboxes or the person raiding the post office or whatever the hypothetical is, if that person steals and votes 100 ballots or 200 ballots, those ballots will not be counted. They just won't, mm-hmm. unless it's extraordinary circumstances.
And explain to us once again how it's one mail-in ballot, one person via that barcode.
Right. So not only do we have barcodes, but when any of your listeners go to mnvotes.org and order that ballot, they'll see that they have to provide some personal identifying information. Typically, it's something like driver's license number or last four of a social security number. There's a range of different options if you don't have either of those things. And only if the mailbox thief or the post office thief knew the exact form of personal identifying information that you, the intended voter, used when you ordered that ballot, only if they knew that, magically knew it and guessed it, only then could they possibly vote that ballot. And I asked around. I asked our head of elections in our office and others in the counties who have been doing this for a long, long time. I've asked them, do you know, over the last two and a half decades, of any instance of a mailbox thief successfully, though illegally, voting a ballot? And their answer was no. They don't know of a single case in Minnesota. If there was one, maybe there was one, they don't know of it.
We're speaking with Secretary of State Steve Simon about the president's comment about universal mail-in voting this fall. And let's speak specifically. I know some states were thinking about moving to a plan called universal mail-in voting. Can you describe what universal mail-in means, and do we have that in Minnesota?
Yeah. First of all, it's not what we're doing. Universal mail-in vote, which is what the president so dislikes, is a system that some states have adopted even before COVID-19, which says that if you're a registered voter, if you're in the system already, you automatically get mailed a ballot, even if you didn't ask for it, even if you don't want it, you're going to get it. That's not what we do in Minnesota. What we're doing is the good old-fashioned absentee voting system. We're calling it vote from home because that's really what it is. But it's precisely that. We've had it for many decades, and that's what we're doing in Minnesota. Does it make the use of the U.S. mail? Sure, but it's not universal vote by mail. I will add that there are about 130,000 Minnesotans who live principally in small rural cities and towns who do vote that way already, and their city governments have chosen that method where there are no polling places, where every registered voter automatically gets a ballot every election. So there are 130,000 mostly in rural areas who do vote that way. But by and large, the millions and millions of Minnesota voters will be using an absentee system, not universal vote by mail.
And explain to me how in the states that does use universal mail-in voting, how do they stop somebody voting via mail and then also then going to their ballot place on election day?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with other states and okay. how they do that in those systems, but the general idea that they have is they're able, the polling places, they either have machinery, equipment, and software that can track mm-hmm. that, or otherwise there are ways through barcodes and others that they can determine people trying to multiple vote. And they're almost always caught. You're going to be caught, and that is a felony.
Okay, excellent. We're getting a couple of calls. People want to know how to get a ballot without internet access.
Ah, sure. Well, you know, you don't have to order it online. You can have someone who does have internet access download and print mm-hmm. the form for you, or you can stroll into a city hall or county courthouse or have them by phone mail you an application. So by no means are you limited to doing it online, but most people do go to mnvotes.org. and order it there, and it's very simple and very easy.
Excellent. Anything else I didn't ask you, or anything else you want to respond to about what the president said, or respond to how the primaries went? Anything I'm missing, Steve?
Yeah, well, the primaries went really well this week, and cross our fingers, right? It's sort of a dress rehearsal for the November election. It doesn't mean things will go exactly that way, but it was a really good sign. We had enough election judges. We had sufficient quantities and good quality of PPE and supplies at the polling place. We had voters and election judges who said that they felt secure. But overall, I think another big story of this last week's election is that almost two-thirds of voters didn't go to a polling place. 62% of our voters, a shockingly high number and percentage, didn't vote in the polling place. They voted by mail. So Minnesotans are trying to tell us something, and what they're trying mm-hmm. to tell us is, this year at least, they really want to vote from home.
And they can do it successfully, thankfully, in Minnesota. Secretary of State Steve Simon, I so appreciate the time and the expertise and the explainer.
My pleasure. Thanks.
I think we lost him right there. But mnvotes.org, right, David? It's mnvotes.org for those who want to order their ballot, for those who have any questions. And I understand if you don't have internet access, phone somebody who does, or, you know, you can go to your city hall and get these questions answered. But if you would like to vote by mail and want to make sure that it gets there on time and it gets counted, do it now. And then vote early, and you will not have any problems with USPS. I promise we will talk about issues with the United States Postal Service a little bit later in the show. Sloan Martin spoke with some employees and some union reps to tell us what is going on behind the scenes and the kind of help that they do need at the Postal Service. But coming up next, we're going to speak with Mike Max, Twins host Kansas City tonight. Maxie with sports next on CCO.
News Talk 830 WCCO Sports with Mike Max.
452 Jordana Green. Maxie's joining us. Hey, Vikings open training camp. Let's talk a little bit about the Vikes.
First, Paul Marzahn, your previous guest, Pastor
Isn't
Paul,
he great?
Was the RA on my floor at Hamline University, Drew Hall. I'm not kidding you. God is my witness, and I can say that with Pastor Paul. He was there.
Stop.
And if he ever tells the stories of what happened at Drew Hall,
he had to keep you in line. I can't believe he survived.
His beautiful wife, Deb, is a Hamline product
She's
as well.
Fantastic. And, you know, she is the police chaplain and also co-pastor over at Crossroads down in Lakeville. They just do such a great job. I love them. They're wonderful humans.
He was a Waterville Elysian product, as I remember back. And like I said, I just hope he doesn't remember everything about Drew Hall. Because we tested him from time to time. You know what I'm saying, Jordan?
Do you, Mike? Do you remember?
Well, the highlights.
Oh, I'll have to get you both on the show. That's
the
a whole
highlights.
Segment. One day.
Yeah,
that's a whole
but,
segment.
But
that's
your fun. Point, your original question,
the Vikings
open training camp today. And it is so different. No
crowd. House, tell us about that.
Well, normally, you know, there's a big crowd out there. And then they have a big mm-hmm. autograph line afterwards. And they've got the extra field where they've got turf. And people can go kick field goals on there and run pass patterns. And then over here, they got some food and they got this and that. None mm-hmm. of that exists. It's just the team practicing and then mm-hmm. the media kind of spread out, social distancing. And that's it. Mm-hmm. It's eerie, you know, what they're doing. And obviously, they're abiding by all the codes. So they just get, you know, they didn't have the pads on today because actually they've been practicing, but this is the first time it's really been open and the media could shoot video of and observe for themselves. But, you know, Dalvin Cook was there. I mean, everybody was Justin Jefferson. People are watching because he's a first-round draft pick. And after that, it just looks like, an ordinary practice with, but when you have the fans there, they kind of ooh and ah every time somebody catches one, things like that. There's a traffic and kind of a buzz. Here it's just like, hey, boys, you know, we got a season coming up. We're practicing. That's it. And no games. We're just going to practice. So it is really different.
Yeah. And what about you? Did they make you have a temperature check?
They have a protocol for the media. And then they, I think it's going to be pretty easy to follow as I look at the guidelines and whatnot, because they have such a big facility out there. And once you get used to it, it's just, like everything else, you got to get used to it. Like you go over to Twins and Target Field, you wait in line, then you get a temperature check, then you fill out a waiver, and then you proceed, and they give you a credential, and you can watch from the press box. I mean, it's the same kind of feel I think will be across, all sports that are in play. And it certainly is different, but, just think about this, though. I mean, obviously 9/11 forced everybody to go through metal detectors, and now you add this temperature check and everything else. It's it's a little bit of work to get to a ball game these days.
For sure. It is a lot of work to get to a ball game these days. We have just a few minutes left. The Twins host Kansas City. Tonight pregame is right here at 6:30 on CCO. Anything exciting there?
Well, Kansas City beat them up pretty good last week, and they did it with really good bullpen. Relief pitching kept coming in and shutting the Twins' bats down. Now, all bats are kind of shut down in Major League Baseball right now. The teams are not. I think they're 230-some is the average average for guys, which is pretty low. Jake Odorizzi gets another shot at his old team, but the Twins are, they're going to live and die with that long ball, and I think they'll be just fine. They had that mini slump last week where we got a little bit concerned. You lose to Pittsburgh and then three to Kansas City, but they bounced back, won a series against Milwaukee, and so as you look at it, the whole thing, I think they're in really good shape here for the next 6 weeks, I guess, then the season's over.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
I mean, that was really fast.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
P.J. Fleck.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just going to ask about the Star Tribune thing. P.J. Fleck says every Gophers player asked supports the Big Ten decision. You believe that?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe based on how it's phrased. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how he framed the question, et cetera. But, he's gotten behind this. His president voted to shut down Big Ten football. And I'm sure at that point he said, hey, PJ didn't get to where he is at such a young age by being dumb. The president says we shouldn't play, then I'm going to keep this $4.6 million contract going on. And I'm sure that he's got, mixed feelings about it because you want to play. But everybody's in that same boat, and it'll be real interesting to see if these other teams play and they play safely. That's the only thing that the Big Ten's probably got at risk right now.
Mike Max, love chatting with you. Thank you for your time, sir. Oh, Mike Max is gone. We're back after the news on CCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.